Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Pro Wrestling Torch Livecast, the PW Torch Livecast for Friday, December the 16th, 2016. I'm senior columnist Bruce Mitchell, soon to be joined by Travis Bryant and our special guest. Describe of last night's total deletion on TNA Impact with the Hardys and Lord knows what a show, what an amazing show. And we'll be talking with Brad Stutz. And who has a unique behind the scenes look at that, because not only, you know, did he participate in it, did he participate behind the scenes, but also he knows the players, and there were a lot of players there. I was just I don't know that I've ever used this word talking about a wrestling show and talking about a wrestling show, but the word generous kept coming to me when I was watching it last night. It was a very different experience for me. If you think this is one show where I don't know that I'm the person to like give you the objective analysis looking at how this fits all together, how doing the ratings and what it builds for later on. Although I thought it was very good and very well done. When you create a new universe, you need to have whatever that universe is, you need to have some rules that it plays by. And this was coherent. This held together, even with all its tongue in cheek allusions and jokes and all the stuff that a lot of times beating up a boat and all the crap that a lot of times I would not have gone for. I thought this was just really well done, and I enjoyed it. I can't believe that you could do that for as long as for 2 hours. And I said repeatedly on this, when the time came for this show, I thought, well, it's going to be like a Saturday Night Live skit that's pretty good for 10, 12 minutes, going an hour and a half. And I think it surpassed that as a wrestling fan, although I can't imagine what any casual fan thought. I mean, a lot of my enjoyment was seeing some things we'll talk with Brad about, but it's definitely there. So let's get Travis up online, and we're gonna get Brad up online too. First, let's go with co-host of the East Coast Cast audio show, heard every Wednesday night all over the internet. Travis Bryant, how you doing?
What's happening, Bruce? Livecast audience, what up?
Yeah, good deal. Last night was really something. Travis, if you indulge me, let me go ahead and bring Brad onto the show. Brad Stutz, the scribe of Broken Matt Hardy brand. Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast.
Thanks, as always, for having me, Bruce.
Yeah, I mean, last night, you know, I may be the only person in North Carolina that has any kind of association with North Carolina wrestling that didn't know any of that, and I really enjoyed it. I just thought it was setting up some things for the Hardys, and I'm sure I'm sure the Young Bucks down the road is the greatest tag team in time and space, but I just saw it as a love letter to the community you're such a big part of, and it was a tremendous deal. And I just wanted to kind of have you take us through how it was all set up and what you and Matt and everybody had in mind as far as this went.
Yeah, I think a love letter is a really good way of putting it. Whether you are from the Carolinas and recognized all the people, not just in the crowd, but also at the gate, waiting to get into the match, or if you're just a fan of thinking outside the box and being truly creative, I think it was a love letter to those people just as much as it was a love letter to the community of North Carolina wrestling. I think it was a validation of some sorts, in a way of saying, hey, your crazy idea isn't so crazy. It can work. It can, you know, be brought into, it can be brought into wrestling, which I think a lot of us have looked at as being very sort of in the box. And I myself am very guilty of that. You know, Bruce, you've known me since I was barely a teenager, and you've known me since I was, you know, palling around with people like Rick Link, who wrestled the old Memphis circuit, and people like Dave Ruth, who was a referee in the Carolinas for decades. And I was brought up very old school minded. But, you know, it is 2016 now. It's, you look around and you see things like Chikara, and you see, you know, crazy viral videos from Japan, and you see, you know, things that make you go, okay, wrestling can be reimagined. And I think it was a love letter to anyone that has a creative vision for how to produce wrestling. But I was super thrilled that it could take place in North Carolina. And I was super thrilled that, you know, like you said, so many people from the wrestling community in North Carolina could play a part of it, whether it was the guys at the gate waiting to be let in or the people in the crowd. Yeah, I think you're right. Geographically, it was great to kind of shine a spotlight on the North Carolina community for one night. It was a labor of love. It really was for everybody, I think.
Yeah, I thought I was – I mean, I'll start with this, maybe the smallest member or just in stature, and it wasn't Swoggle. Start with Colby. Grant Sawyer, who works so closely with CWF, his son, who I have come to know by going to the CWF Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium and having him sit behind me. And, you know, I go back a ways as far as John Hitchcock and I and my friends as far as – and you guys are certainly in this too. But, I mean, as far as being a heckler and being able to, like, kind of have some fun doing that. And this kid is a monumentally great heckler. I've seen him just have fun – you know, just rooting for bad guys, just letting them have it. And there he was in his green shirt. And I was like, that kid, he needed to be there. He should have been there. And his father was having a ball too, right there on that row. But I mean, I just thought there was so many, Robert Holt, there were so many people that not only, you know, not only was it Trevor Lee and Andrew Everett, who are already, and Hurricane Helms and all of that, but it was just that the devoted parts of that community and people who really kind of deserve some spotlight there. I mean, I just thought there's some real talent there. And as far as creativity goes, a lot of times, and I think Chikara works. I mean, when I watch it, I see it. You know, it plays by its rules. You know, it plays by its storytelling rules, and this did too. I just thought a lot of times creative, I think it's going to fall apart, or it's not going to be, you know, at some point someone's going to go, it's only wrestling, just screw it, we'll just do it anyway. And you know, this, as chaotic as it was, and as tongue in cheek as it was at many points, it held together as a narrative. I mean, it really, and it paid off a lot. You had to have a lot of knowledge, I think, of professional wrestling to get the jokes, but I mean, it was they were there for the getting, and it just really, it was a real celebration. I was just so impressed with it. It was so cool to see, you know, so cool to see Snooty Fox and Ethan Alexander Sharp and the Ugly Ducklings, and they with what's happened with Colby Carino, they've had a tough little run, but I mean, it was really something. It was really cool.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head, honestly. I think, you know, I grew up on Mid-South and Smoky Mountain and World Class. You know, I grew up on really old school territories, but I love Chikara. I absolutely love Chikara. It might be my favorite wrestling that's going today, and it's for that reason. It's, you know, you can set up anything in your own little universe. And I think that's what a lot of, not that there's necessarily has to be a division between old school minded or modern minded people. There doesn't have to be, but I think that's where a lot of people kind of lose sight of things is, yeah, if someone had pulled out an invisible grenade on Mid-South Wrestling in 1982, it would have been a laughing stock. He would have been physically assaulted. You know, all these things are true. But if you create a context wherein that can work in your universe and everyone's on the same page and everyone goes along with it and every, you know, no one's, you know, rolling their eyes at it or no one's winking at the audience, then it can work. And I think that was kind of some of the beauty of what we did last night. I think it, you know, having Ricky and Robert there and them just embracing it wholeheartedly and just having a ball with everything that they were doing. In a weird way, I think stuff like that gives credibility to the idea that, you know, okay, if guys like that are with it, then I can get with it too. I don't have to feel, you know, any certain way about this other than just enjoy it.
Well, I've getting to be really sentimental about Ricky Morton. I don't know exactly. Oh, I do know exactly right, because I've been watching him decade after decade after decade be who he is and really, you know, be as smart as you can be with what he has to work in the wrestling business. And it's still, you know, if you're around here, you see it work. Even at this late age and how he looks, and he's a, you know, a boy band 40 years past and still can be effective. And I thought anchoring it with them in the scene, and you're right, like it gave it a kind of like credibility, and they weren't camping it up. I mean, they were playing it straight, which I think was just, and everybody did. I thought that was really important. And then to have them to have Ricky Morton symbolically ascend to the heavens, I thought was such a cool little point to this. I mean, I just that there was, you know, there's a line that goes, you know, that goes from Ricky and Robert and, you know, the Midnight Express and all the way through, you know, to the Bravado Brothers, to any, you know, to everybody that's working here now. And I thought that was really well done. And also the light comedy of Morton, just how Morton is, you know, bring me down, the ribs over. I mean, yeah. I just thought that was tremendous. I mean, that was,
no,
yeah.
I said it on Twitter this afternoon, and I'll say it again on this show. I need some people to wrap Ricky in bubble wrap and never let anything bad happen to him ever, so that we can have him forever. Cause he's a gem. He's a treasure. And it was so cool to see him and see Robert, you know, having fun with it. And I have to give a ton of credit to Abyss and Crazy Steve, who were amazing. If you saw the show, that was all my guys that they worked with, and they were amazing. And, you know, it really, none of us knew what to expect, to be perfectly honest. I really thought, from my understanding, that it was going to be just kind of like a 30-second cutaway of, okay, all these people are lined up, and here comes Abyss and Crazy Steve, like, throwing people out of the way, and that was it. And then, so to get there and know everybody's going to have a little spotlight, everybody's going to have a little moment, was so cool. And Abyss and Steve were so, it's a weird thing to say if you watch it back, but like, Abyss and Steve were so cool and so down for anything anybody wanted to do. And any, you know, it's weird to see that. And it's maybe weird to hear that, cause you're like, oh, well, they just kind of smashed everybody, but they didn't. It was really, it was a collaborative process, and it was really, really cool. I gotta be honest, everyone that I've met, that I've worked with the TNA has been like that so far. You know, Jeremy Borash is tremendous, and he and the producer Jimmy Long are maybe the two hardest working people I know, as far as, you know, just producing and bringing a creative vision like this to life. So I give all the props in the world to them, and to Matt and Jeff and Shane Helms and Abyss, and just everybody that made this a thing. And, you know, you had a little something for everybody. I think you had Bobby Lashley and Eddie Edwards go out there and have a hell of a match, you know, that I don't think anybody was quite expecting. Under the circumstances.
Yeah, that kind of gave him a thread to roll through and bind all this together. I want to talk about Abyss and Crazy Steve and the sequences of the gate. And I want you to take us through your guys and talk about who was at the gate and, you know, Dirty Daddy and what his I hesitate to use the word gimmick, but what his, you know, what his character's about, and just kind of for people who don't know. I mean, I was sitting there going popping for these guys, and they all, and the thing that was funny to me, not funny to me, but was really cool to me, and you're a part of this, is with CWF Mid-Atlantic, is that they all had something. They all had, they just weren't some guy, you know, just, they weren't just fresh meat at all. And you're right. The fact that Abyss and Crazy Steve were able to do something as briefly as it was, but still do something that fit the character that that's been established for them, I thought was really cool. I mean, I mean, that's why I was like, I don't know that I'm the person to sit there and go, if you'd never seen, you might just think, well, who are all these guys and all that? But I was just like, if you knew, man, it was really something special.
No, I completely agree, and I think that's one of my big takeaways from this. Whether I have, whether I have any kind of future, doing anything else on TV other than just, you know, popping up for my 10 seconds here and there, which I love doing, but whether I have anything else or not, you know, we all kind of had this night, and it was cool to all have this night together, you know. We were out in front of the Hardy Gate for a while. It was very cold. And Abyss and Steve were just super into it. And we had Jimmy Long, a.k.a. Paradise, who was with us as the producer. And he's so creative and really an unsung hero as far as a lot of the post-production elements that come into play and just being really, really smart with shots and with verbiage and with everything that goes into these. I've got to work with him and JB a couple of times on these Matt Hardy on location shoots, and just a super bright, talented guy. And it was basically, you know, me, him, and Abyss and Steve putting it together. and it was great. You know, Abyss, one of the longest tenured guys there, and just super approachable, super, into whatever idea anybody had. And this was actually my first time meeting or working with Crazy Steve, but I thought he was great. I love that, you know, there was a little something different about each segment, and literally just, you know, he turns, he goes, what if I break one of their necks, you know, and, you know, little things like that. And it was great. It was great to see John Skyler and Corey Hollis, the Bruiserweights, who have had a little bit of exposure on Raw, a little bit on NXT. It was great to get them in the mix. It was great to have the Ugly Ducklings. And I was kind of like you said, I was really, really thrilled that there was no pushback at all from TNA as far as, you know, hey, can you, the guys wearing their shirts, and the guy and the Ducks wore the duck masks. And, you know, it was it very much, they got it. They weren't trying to just use guys as meat to chop up, like you said. They were in it.
Give a thumbnail sketch of the Ugly Ducklings. Now, I know Lance Lute, and I know, you know, I've seen these guys on your shows and on other shows, and I'm a fan, and, you know, they're probably the only independent tag team that I'm a fan of, that Vince Russo is a fan of. But, I mean, it's give a thumbnail sketch of the Ugly Ducklings and what they're about.
Basically, it's three small junior heavyweight, sort of grungy, gnarly looking guys. They can all work their asses off. Lance Lude, Rob Killjoy, and Colby Carino, who I know has been the topic of conversation of a lot of people recently. I'm not going to talk about that other than Colby is a stand-up guy. He's a great guy, and we are all of us in the Carolinas are pulling for him to get healthy and get back in the game with us. But they're three just kind of gnarly junior heavyweights. They can do amazing high-flying stuff, and they were just kind of put together as a whim. And I think it was Rob Killjoy who coined the term that we were just a bunch of ugly ducklings. And it really, it's weird. You always hear the story of, like, the night Arn Anderson said the Horsemen, and then, you know, a month later or a week later, everybody had the signs in the crowd, but it was like that. I think Rob coined the term that, no, we're just a bunch of ugly ducklings out here. and you know, the signs came and the fans quacking and throwing the rubber ducks in the ring like streamers on their entrance. And it really has become kind of a cult thing here in the Carolinas and beyond. So
one of the things I like about,
and of course, anything that's taller than 6 feet, Lance Lude's got to jump off of.
Well,
so
yeah,
that, I was glad to see that little that continuity carried over into TNA as well.
Yeah, and those guys, they're definitely talented, athletic, junior heavyweights, cruiserweights, but they're also, but all three of them have these just expressive faces. I mean, it's just, you know, that works together with that too, the grungy part of it. But they're just, you know, they've got their characters too with the wrestling. And I think that's definitely there. Give some more thumbnail sketches of some of these folks.
John Schuyler and Corey Hollis, the bruiserweights, just kind of roughnecks. You know, saying basically that we're the next evolution of the cruiserweights. We're bruiserweights. We'll beat your face in. Snooty Fox and Dirty Daddy, two students out of the CWF Mid-Atlantic Dojo. Dirty Daddy is a veteran wrestler who broke in back in the territory days. He broke in under Don Owen in Portland, and he ended up getting blackballed for 30 years by the National Wrestling Alliance over an affair with a wrestling promoter's wife. And so now, 30 years later, in 2015, he had to start all over again as a rookie in the Carolinas. And so that's kind of a thumbnail sketch on Dirty Daddy. And his
now, Dirty Daddy gives you, you as the play-by-play announcer of CWF Mid-Atlantic on YouTube, and those shows are really getting some well-deserved attention. And that gives you a chance to talk about his background, which gives you a chance to show off your knowledge of all that. And it's very, again, you know, tongue in cheek, but straight. And it's very enjoyable for someone like me and a lot of folks that enjoyed that time. And then just like the fact that Dirty Daddy, I think you have an explanation for it and I'll let you give it, but Dirty Daddy has not aged so much as the others.
He's got the Freebird skin cream.
I need the skin. Yeah, exactly.
He's got the Freebird skin cream that keeps him looking youthful. You can't let it get in your hair, though. It'll pull your hair right out. Yeah. But the skin cream keeps the wrinkles out, and it keeps him looking youthful.
Yeah, and then Snooty Fox is the guy who came to your, you know, is the guy at your school that's part of your show, but you know, was so well regarded in Chapel Hill that he could sell shows for you at the beginning of his career, and he's got a great look and a great presence. I mean, so I was glad. I like.
Yeah,
Snooty,
those were
so
the two guys. I do too. I think he's gonna be somebody in the Carolinas and probably beyond for a while now. For the uninitiated, for people that don't live in North Carolina, Snooty and Dirty were the two guys at the gate. That upon Corey Hollis's neck getting snapped, gave the now quotable and vinable line of "Your boy dead." That was Dirty and Snooty. And we also got to see Ethan Sharp and White Mike. In there, White Mike was the gentleman who tossed his jacket aside and let out the blood-curdling scream rather than fight decay. One of the most entertaining people in the Carolinas, and a great story. I talk about it on commentary a lot, and Bruce, you can attest to this. North Carolina is very weird geographically. If you've never been here, you have the middle portion, you have mountains to one side and beaches to one side, and we don't really cross over all that much. So you can get a guy like White Mike, this is true of Rob Killjoy also, who can spend 8, 9, 10 years wrestling in the mountains in western North Carolina and then branch out to the Greensboro, Raleigh area and sort of get discovered all over again, which I think, I haven't been around the world, but that seems unique to North Carolina to me. I don't know of any other place where that's the case. But yeah, the first time we saw White Mike, we were like, where has this guy been? And he's been wrestling at flea markets and middle schools and, you know, the mountains of North Carolina for 8, 9 years. And so it was really, really cool to see someone like him get that opportunity.
Yeah, the more
I know has put the time in on some real small rinky-dink shows.
Yeah, I really enjoyed his.
See him get a chance.
I really enjoyed his match at y'all's last show at the Sportatorium with Nick Richards, and I'm getting more and more into him. But I you got to love a guy that has no self consciousness whatsoever in how he plays it. I mean, he's White Mike Jordan. I mean, there's enough heat in that name, you know, particularly around here to like. You know, just is ridiculous. And then he's out there in his NWA shirt, and it doesn't say National Wrestling Alliance. And he couldn't be a worse dancer. He couldn't be. And then screaming like, screaming like, excuse me for putting it this way, but screaming like a little girl when he gets hit. And he is remarkably entertaining. And yeah, I was really happy to see in his cameo. I mean, God, you got to let him screech out one, and he got to and run away like a ninny. I mean, he's what a cool character. And there's a lot I know that can be done with him, and so I was glad to see him.
And that was a great example. Honestly, that was a great example of like the cooperation with the TNA staff as far as kind of taking a little bit of direction when they didn't have to, and kind of taking the suggestion of like, hey, instead of this guy getting killed, we should let him tear his jacket off and kind of do his gimmick. And there's a shot that didn't make the final cut. I have no idea if there's going to be any kind of extended cut of Apocalypto or not. I hope there is. But there's a shot that didn't make the final cut where upon filming the first part, Jimmy, the producer, said, okay, now we got to get the shot follow him running through the woods. So that's out there somewhere if it ever sees the light of day. And then there's another little thing that kind of got cut. You see a second of it wherein he eventually runs into Lashley. You got just a second of that. But the original was a little bit longer, wherein he eventually makes it into the house and runs into Lashley. But that was cool. We got to see Eric Royal for a second in that also.
Oh my God, I missed Eric Royal.
Aaron Biggs.
I want to take a moment. I missed Eric Royal.
Eric Royal is the guy who gets speared right before White Mike gets speared.
Oh, okay. Eric Royal is so good. I mean,
they chopped that up a little bit, but yeah, Eric Royal is the guy who gets speared right a second before White Mike gets speared.
Yeah.
There's a longer cut of that, that's showbiz. And then of course got Aaron Biggs and Mecha Mercenary, the Sandwich Squad. Those are the two 400-pound guys. And I think the last shot with Abyss and Steve after the Bravados have snuck in, and as Rockstar Spud is still waiting on his partner, you got Mecha Mercenary and Aaron Biggs, the Sandwich Squad, squaring off with Kay, which is a match that I would love to make happen at some point in the Carolinas or elsewhere. But
now,
those
Mecha
two guys
is the one who got
big.
Yeah, he got his skull crushed by Abyss, right? He's the one.
Yes, he did.
Yes, yes. You know,
yes,
I know Mecha Mercer, but yeah.
But those just two big, fun-loving, high-energy, amazing baby faces that just light up a room anytime they come in. Those two guys, I think, have got bright, bright futures. They both have a lot of physical gifts. They both have great physical stature, but they both move tremendously well. They're both great athletes. They're both very energetic and very personable. I really think Mecha Mercenary and Aaron Biggs are two guys that you're going to hear a lot more about in the next couple of years. They don't really fit, you know, the mold of as far as like Andrew Everett and Trevor Lee and Cedric Alexander and Caleb Conley and some of the guys that have broken out. But I think that's going to play to their advantage, and I think somebody is going to get a look at these two 400-pound guys that can move, that have great personalities, that have very expressive faces, even though you never quite see that because it's there. And I think somebody is going to take those guys and make a lot of money with them. I honestly do. Mm-hmm. So it was great to feature them also. It really was. Like you said, it was a love letter of sorts to Carolina wrestling in a way, and it was cool to sort of have that underlying theme throughout the show. Even the reporter was our interview girl from CWF Mid-Atlantic, CL Parker.
Oh, Lord, yes, we got to get to that.
So it was really, really great to kind of be part of all that.
Let me stop you just for a second, Brad. I want to Travis is going to kill me, and I don't know that I blame him. And so I'm going to bring him back in the conversation. Travis, listening to this, I know you've seen
some of this.
Yeah, I know. That's true. So reaction to some of this. I mean, does this I know you're skeptical about Broken Matt Hardy. Did anything you see last night or hear now change any of that? Or do you have any questions for it or any comments with it?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get to see it. So, yeah, I know you gave me the heads up this morning, but yeah. I kind of had stuff to do today. I saw some clips, out of context clips that I didn't particularly enjoy. Oh, well, the rock and roll guy walking up to the door and getting invited in, that was, I guess, decent enough. But yeah, that was really it. That and the burial scene, man, 3 inches. But again, out of context, without any, an hour and 40 minutes of stuff, I saw 3 minutes of.
Yeah, well, we'll get you back on this. This show is
I'm more interested in Dirty Daddy, and there was somebody else who you talked about earlier who I was like, oh, crap, I kind of want to. Maybe it's the Ugly
Duckling,
but this Dirty Daddy guy, certainly.
Dirty Daddy, is it CWF Mid-Atlantic? I believe it's number 82, Dirty Daddy and Nick Richards. Yeah, you need to see Dirty. You need to – not no, that Dirty Daddy. That was White Mike Jordan. Boy, I'm confusing gimmicks. Anyway, but yeah, you need to see Dirty Daddy for Dirty Daddy himself and the commentary, Mr. Stutz, and just hearing that. And then – White Mike Jordan is hilarious too. So, but yeah, it's I think everybody's in their context and place as far as the card goes. You build the entertainment and this kind of entertainment in the mid card of these cards, and then you build to you build to Trevor Lee and Otis Swans and Andrew Everett and the bigger stuff. And that's there. Let me take a second go ahead.
It does, Bruce, though, real quick, sound very, you centric.
Very.
You know all those guys. And I'm like, okay, White Mike and Dirty Daddy sound okay, but. Yeah, I wouldn't have got it if I sat there and watched it last night this morning. Like, okay, I don't.
Right. I mean, that's why I kind of said I'm not the person to give you the from five states away look at it. It's like this was, like I said, this was, and like I said, as soon as I started watching, this is what I think it is, and it got better because of weaving all this in and out, and that's why I wanted to talk to Brad, because there's nobody closer to this than Brad, as far as it goes.
Another thing, though, Bruce, it's interesting hearing you praise this, and especially how, off the wall and different than traditional pro wrestling. And then you're talking about Chikara, and, oh, yeah, I like Chikara. Weren't you the guy that was, super, skeptical and, Mr. Curmudgeon about the time, the hypnotizing gimmick they did, 5 years ago that was a, big internet hit as far as wrestling fans go?
Yeah, I was.
On
I certainly
and
was.
Everybody danced and all, and you're like, did that make them any money? Did who
yeah, I mean, that's there? Where
just,
I kind of
instead of just enjoying for what it was.
Yeah, I mean,
that was you, right?
Yeah, that was me, and I appreciate you bringing that up. And my thing with Chikara was is that it what I've watched and what I've seen is always the universe has its rules and they stick to them, and the booking is sequential and it makes sense. I just don't think that is going to draw any more money than it already is. And that little viral thing, yeah, I mean, my objection to it was, what do you do with it and where do you go? And the hypnotism, and it was it faded out. I mean, it was just, it was got them some attention and that was about it. But I go back to, and you know this, I'm a comic book guy, and I've seen bad comic books where they don't, and one of the problems with it is they're not well thought out enough. There's not enough internal logic, internal rules of whatever universe they have that are set up that then they play by, and it just falls apart. And a lot of times I see the creativity in wrestling sometimes is like this. How come we've never seen this? Wouldn't it be great if blah, blah happened and switched what usually happens? And I'm like, yeah, it might be great, but how does this fit together? How does this work? And I thought last night fit together and built towards something, and it built toward, you know, it's building towards a program between Ring of Honor and TNA, and not even that specifically. More specifically, it's building into the Young Bucks versus the Broken Matt Hardy brand and Brother Nero, and I think there's something there, and I think that's there. And also, you know, TNA right now is a unique place as far as they can do this because they don't have as much built. They don't have as much built up. So yeah, I know it's odd to not hear me tear this down. And I was skeptical the first time when Sean Radican told me this was going to change the business. And I don't think this is going to change the business, but on the first one. But this one was just, like I said, this one was one where it was more personal for me, and I wanted to get over some of why with that. If you two guys would hold on just a second, since I've done a terrible job of running the of running the show. Let me run the show just a little bit. Here we go.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
Brad, I want to talk about Ethan Alexander Sharp, who was on this, you know, got a little feature with it, but is kind of Playboy Gary Hart, the mama's boy, rich guy, Jim Cornette, same thing. There's a little of you, I think, in him, but I see him as a performer just getting more and more confident and someone who I could see as he develops really, you know, really a part of the sports entertainment side or the WWE side of what's done. Talk about Ethan for a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're very accurate in that thumbnail of him. I think he's an interesting guy because when I first met him, and I've had this reaction a couple of times with people, to be quite honest with you, I thought, okay, this kid's going to train, but he doesn't, you know, I did not see his gifts right away. Some people, whether they're physical or, you know, charisma or whatever, some people like an Eric Royal or a Snooty Fox or, you know, someone like that, you see their gifts right away, and others, it takes a little bit to develop. And, yeah, I think you're right. I think Ethan is going to be a big part of our future in the Carolinas. I think he's going to be tasked with anchoring a lot of segments and a lot of matches and a lot of tag team partners and a lot of situations, quite frankly, that he can go out with his personality, with his charisma, with his verbal ability. He can go out and get this over and make this work. So I absolutely think he's going to be a big part of our future at CWF and beyond. And to go even a step further than that, that kid is the first one to get there. He's the last one to leave. He's the only one I ever see at every single training session, more than anybody else, more than I'm there, more than anybody's there. You know, he wants it. He wants to do this. He wants to get better at it. He wants to be factored in. And I think he's a hard worker. And now that we have tapped into a persona and a presentation that he shines in, I think Ethan Sharp is going to be a big part of our future, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I love hearing that just in the fact of it's the guy who plays the exact opposite character. you know, the rich guy. I mean, it's the classic wrestling character, but the rich guy who is trying to, who's just entitled to every single shortcut, but it takes a lot of preparation and time and real thought and work to play it well. And yeah, his presentation, how he dresses, how his face looks, that stupid mustache. I mean, he's pure heel too. You don't get anybody cheering for him. It's you know, he gets under some of your regular fan skin in a very entertaining way. And he's, yeah, I mean, just pure classic rich guy villain and wuss, but still, you can beat him, and he has his heat, and he gets it back. And I love the deal with him and Eric Rohrl at the last show, just, you know, buying a guy to be his partner to go up against the Sandwich Squad, and then they, after not being able to buy the belts from the Sandwich Squad, and then the partner, even though he's a jerk and a heel now, just taking his money and ripping him off and leaving him for the beating too. I mean, and he still got back up, and it wasn't like it died at all. It was, that I thought was really well played.
Yeah.
So, that was,
that's, I think the part of the beauty of that character is that character doesn't lose his heat. You know, you can do anything with him. And I think it's really cool. I think classic is a great way to describe everything we go for at CWF. It's very classic. It's very vintage. And, you know, that's by design. Nothing against anybody else, but I go to some of these shows and, you know, 6 out of 8 matches are doing the, like, I respect you, bro, handshake after the match. And it's like, oh, I'm pulling my hair out, because that's just not the presentation that I love. Nothing against anybody that does, but, you know, I think our audience prefers, you know, heroes and villains, you know, booing the bad guy and cheering the good guy, and wrestling sort of like it was, with the athleticism and the quality of the matches updated, but the storytelling and the devices that we use to get our point across, very vintage, very retro.
You know, and when I watch it, I don't think it, you know, I'm sure people listening to it going, Bruce is old, so he's going to like the retro. And of course, I do very much am a fan and a student of old school wrestling. But I look at what you guys do and I go, okay, this made sense. This builds. This is, you know, clear characters, clear, simple characters that the fans are responding to and remembering from show to show what they've done. And then the wrestling at the top of the card is as good as anybody's. It's not, you know, I've seen the try for the old fashioned show, and it's usually someone from the old fashioned era kind of faking their way through a match, and there's none of that with this. And I think there's something there. I mean, I think, you know, that's modern just by taking some storytelling, some normal storytelling and applying it to the modern style. I think that's good. And yeah, I'm not a big fan either of we just put on a hell of a performance for you people, you know, and shaking hands. I tend to get really tired of that really quickly. I think there's a time in a story to shake hands, but between opponents, but it's rare. It shouldn't be a trope every single. It shouldn't be a trope throughout just your basic show.
And maybe there's an audience for the shows where that is a trope that you see throughout the night. But if, I mean, you can attest from having been in the building, it's not our place. It's not our audience. You know, our audience is super respectful of, like, the Ray Kandrak retirement speech, which was very real and very emotional. You know, our audience is they get that, but they're, it's not that kind of stuff is not a part of the escapist experience that they're looking for. They're looking for an escapist experience more like, you know, the wrestling of the 80s or beyond, of, like I said, you know, cheering and booing and getting lost in it. And it's a very classic presentation at CWF. I want to throw out Chet Sterling made his big national TV debut last
absolutely,
night as well.
Absolutely.
We have to shout him out.
Yeah.
Because that's the guy that I think is going to be a name a lot of people know very shortly.
Well, talk about the match he was in. And yeah, he got to have a match. So,
and it was great. You know, I've known Jeff and Matt Hardy since I was 11 years old. So that's, you know, it's cool to now be on the other side of it and be there producing a segment that they were in and getting, you know, one of my guys who's very much like Ethan Sharp, you know, who's a workhorse, who's there all the time, who has put in the time. You know, I don't know if you remember, but, you know, Chet Sterling started out as a character not unlike that of Ethan Sharp. He was Trevor Lee's apprentice.
Which we
kind of got to bring the tie and everything back last night, which was cool also. But, you know, he started out as a character not unlike Ethan Sharp. He was Trevor Lee's apprentice. And so to watch the growth and the maturation of Chet from almost day one, he came to us very, very, very early in his career before he'd had a match. So to watch his evolution from that to the point of, you know, getting to make a national television debut and getting to work with Jeff Hardy. And, you know, for me personally to be there and be helping produce that segment was tremendous. You know, it's a long way from being, you know, 11 years old in the crowd, high-fiving Will the Wisp to, you know, now, all these years later, being, you know, helping produce a segment that he's involved with a guy that I've known from day one, from his first day in the business, that is. So that was real cool. Chet, I think, is a guy that needs to be getting out more places and doing more stuff. Shout out to Nova Pro Wrestling at VA Wrestling on Twitter. And shout out also to Modern Vintage Wrestling at Gimmick Tree over in Wilmington. They're kind of the first ones to get in on the ground floor with Chip Sterling, but there's going to be a lot more to come because that's the guy that I think is going to go places. Just a great athlete, great look, great attitude, finding his voice as a promo. You know, the story that we're doing right now with him and Lee Valiant that will culminate at the end of the month is really his first real sort of gritty Southern babyface feud, and I think he's more than holding his own verbally. I think Chet Sterling, who wrestled Itch Lead last night, is one of the guys that a lot of people are going to be hearing about.
He's been rising in the last couple of years. He's a guy that like has everything that you could that could make him to a national promotion. I mean, there's, you know, and get that name better there. I mean, I just I was like, man, good to see Chet doing that. And I didn't know I was going to see everybody, and I was just like, that one just got it all started. And I thought that was and I thought he did a good job, you know, not he did a good job doing what he needed to do to get Jeff's Jeff's Gardner gimmick over, and without like
what
I gotta do my thing too.
That's just
hilarious. I mean, I don't know the weed eater gimmick. I mean, it's just like, if you told me that one, I mean, when I think of weed eaters in wrestling, I think of going to indie shows years ago where they give away a weed eater to someone in the crowd that usually turned out to be, you know, the promoter's relative. But I mean, of all things, and yeah, it was, again, you know, I enjoyed it. I thought it worked. It was tremendous. Now, I'm thinking my favorite part of the whole show was Ricky and Robert chasing down Trevor and Andrew Everett with the Roman candles. I just thought, geez, that was, you know, there's something about me. I mean, there is something to Roman candles in North Carolina and fireworks at a certain time of the year and, you know, all doing some stuff like that. But that, and then, you know, the fireballs hitting Abyss, I just thought was, you know, just, geez, really creative and really kind of.
I think maybe my favorite part of the whole thing, may have been the Helms Dynasty rolling up in the truck on CL Party, who was, you know, doing the news report.
Yeah.
And Trevor and Drew are just hooping and hollering like maniacs, and they speed off, and when they, you know, we call cut, we've got the shot, we've got everything we need. Helms pulls the truck back around to where we're all standing, and Trevor and Drew are both laughing uproariously. And when they sped off, they literally met Trevor's actual grandmother who lives in Cameron, who just happened to be driving down the street, and they literally, like, she, you know, turns her head, and there's her grandson and this other guy in their wrestling trunks, pooping and hollering in the back of a pickup truck for this TV shoot. That might be my favorite, my lasting memory of just the sheer,
oh God, that's awesome, yeah,
madness
that's
of it all, that yeah. We ran into Trevor's shoot grandmother while doing this shoot, and he's in his wrestling trunks hooping and hollering in the back of a pickup truck.
Well, when they're taking bumps into the Cameron, North Carolina sign, I was just like, where are the police exactly? Did you tell them that you know, hey, we're doing this, or was it just outlaw? Or I figured it was just outlaw, but I was like laughing, going, you're just driving down the road going, hey, look, there's some wrestlers fighting on the side of the road. It's like,
I didn't tell them anything. Right. I had no conversation with the Cameron police, so I assume no one else did either. Yeah. But yeah, that was a shoot train that went by. That was a shoot truck that went by.
That's what I was wondering. The storefront
they
tremendous.
Were fighting in front of.
Yeah,
like yeah. It was just that was natural ambiance. We just had there literally. There just happened to be a train coming. The little gimmicks came down. You know, warning that you can't drive across it. And we got the shot of, you know, of them fighting in front of the train, fighting as the train went by, and just little stuff that you can't plan and you can't schedule that added so much to it, and just added that little, like I said, you can't get more authentic than running into Trevor Lee's actual grandmother who lives in Cameron and doesn't know what the hell we're all doing. You can't get any more authentic than that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Talk about Shane Helms. I really like that. You know, Shane Helms has been a great support player in national promotions for years, and now and is now too. But he's such a student of the history of professional wrestling, particularly here in North Carolina and Mid-Atlantic and that stuff. And the Hall of Heroes banquets uses him in the NWA Fan Fest in Charlotte as a host, because he's so knowledgeable and you know, has such a love for that stuff. But to see his career get highlighted in such a clever way, talk about Helms.
Yeah, he's been just such a champion for North Carolina wrestling, you know, for so long now, as far as someone who has, you know, looked out for everyone and given back and just super, super supportive and sort of replenishing the garden, so to speak, in North Carolina. And that's true of Matt and Jeff also. All three of those guys, you know, they want to give more than they take. They want to leave, you know, wrestling in this area better than they found it. And Shane in particular is just so sharp. Like, he's a quick wit.
Right, yeah, he really,
really
is.
Great.
Yeah.
He's really, really great speaker, you know, even more than, like you said, doing, like, the Hall of Heroes banquet every year. And he's gotten a couple of other hosting opportunities here and there, and just a really, really great speaker and a great presence. And genuinely, I feel very blessed to be able to work with Shane and Matt and Jeff, who all have that attitude as far as wanting to replenish the garden and wanting to, you know, give back and help build people up and help contribute to the scene here locally. You don't get that everywhere. You get some guys who come back and they just want to pick up a check, or they don't. You get some guys that come back that don't want to do anything. They don't even want to, you know, leave their house. So it's really, really refreshing to get somebody like Shane, somebody like Matt, who is so receptive to ideas and is so eager to bend over backwards to help somebody that's coming up, help somebody that's trying to get where they've been. I can't speak enough good things about them in that regard, because it's a selflessness that you don't get very often. And that is just really tremendous. And
so it's really cool
to
see
little
things
like a line in a promo, anything to help.
Yeah, it's cool to see, you know, the reincarnation to three count was just like out of nowhere, and you're just laughing your head off at that. I mean, who thought we were going to see a tribute to that? And then the reincarnation and then joining back with the Hardys as Hurricane Helms was just, you know, really cool, like, little deal for that. And I just thought, took advantage of what he can do now. And yeah, and I see a lot of the same things with him a lot of times with this stuff. And, you know, sometimes you watch a guy play a character on television, and it was sharp what he did with The Rock all those years ago, but he is so sharp behind that too. I mean, I've always enjoyed talking to him. I wanted to also say, you know, as far as North Carolina went, you had Tracy Myers and AML wrestling in the crowd. I mean, if you told me that, I was just shocked that he didn't wear his Uncle Sam hat. But the other part was that just, if you'd have told me, finally after all these years, I'd see Flaming Youth on national television in that crowd. That was who works for him, and that was just hilarious. I mean, that was just tremendous. I was happy for that guy. I know that must have been quite the moment for him, and you know, so those guys too. I mean, it was just in there catching wrestlers and grabbing them and having you know, and then just the build from in the arena to get out of the arena and out and. The smoke, I was just, for Apocalypto, was just, yeah, it was very indie movie too, which I thought, and I've seen terrible indie movies, I've seen very good indie movies, and as I said, having some sort of consistency throughout of it, it just really helps. Who else do we need to highlight that was there last night? I mean, that was on the show last night.
I can't say enough about Paradise James Long and about Jeremy Borash, who really were, you know, the producers and the brain trust, and, you know, they were the guys that made it work, whether we needed a green, you know, effect for when Helms came out of the water, or whether we needed this shot or that done. You know, those are the two guys that made this show happen as much as anybody else did. They deserve all the credit for that. And they've been at, you know, every single Matt Hardy shoot that I've been on. So really just super creative, super smart, sharp guys that you know, are putting something different out there. You know, it was great to see all that. It was great to see John Schuyler and Corey Hollis. It was great to see Mecca and Aaron, you know, get that moment. I think we've covered just about everybody, but even like referee Kevin Pierce from CWF, who, you know, got his first national exposure of what I know is not going to be the last. I know that, you know, referee Kevin Pierce is somebody that I think is going to be, you know, on national television every week one day. It was really, really neat to, like you said, to kind of have a love letter to the Carolinas. And it really was that as much as it was anything else. And you know, I understand, you know, where your co-host is coming from as far as that's not going to, you know, that's not going to translate everywhere, but I do think that the broadcast translates universally just as entertaining, just as, you know, everything. I don't think you lose anything by not having that local sense of tie-in with it.
No, I agree. I mean, I agree. Because
I think the broadcast stands on its own.
Yeah, I think the theme of it was, you know, the Hardy, the broken Hardys being the greatest tag team in time and space in this weird milieu, or whatever you want to say. I very much think, as a student of the business as you are, I would never say that something's never happened before, but on the other hand, I've never seen a show that built up to the announcement of a new baby too, and just really kind of worked in that way. It worked. I mean, I was just like shaking my head going, this is tremendous. And I really have liked how Broken Matt Hardy has gone from kind of a zombie-like character, heel character, to a family character, and embrace the fact that the Hardys have this intrinsic, just because of their history and then who they are, this intrinsic likability that they can work with. And this, you know, as they reinvent themselves and keep that, so and have fun with it. So I was just shaking my head laughing with that. I want to give you a chance. I will be Friday, December the 30th, and I know the torch is now with Jeremy Bryant doing a weekly recap of and link to the CWF Mid-Atlantic show that's on YouTube on the CWF Mid-Atlantic channel, and so kind of a guide for folks who are just trying it out. And I recommend it. It is a your production values are such that it very much is like watching an hour wrestling show. I mean, it's what it is. And the Christmas show, the Christmas show, Grant Sawyer, starting with that CBS role, I just about fell out. Talk about nostalgia for an old person. That was tremendous. But the Christmas special was a lot of fun with the old school commercials. But Jeremy Bryant is doing that for the Torch now, and people can get that. But talk about your biggest show of the year. Talk about Battlecade, December the 30th. And Jeremy and I and John Filipovich coming down, the director of Barbed Wire City, ECW coming out of Philadelphia area, and you've got people traveling. And talk about that show, because I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's our biggest night of the year. It's Friday night, December the 30th. As I said on television, if you can drive to Gibsonville, North Carolina, just outside of Greensboro, you need to get there. For people everywhere else in the world, this show will be broken up into three parts on the first three Wednesday nights of January. So if you're missing it live, the first three Wednesday nights in January will bring you part one, part two, and finally part three. Trevor Lee defends the Mid-Atlantic title against Brad Attitude, former developmental prospect who is now very bitter at someone, you know, Trevor's age, getting opportunities and getting exposure that he never had when he was Trevor's age, when he was trying to get signed. And at the culmination of a long story arc there, Chet Sterling will be in action against Lee Valiant. The pile driver, which is normally illegal in CWF Mid-Atlantic, will be legalized for that one. Mecha Mercenary and Aaron Biggs will defend the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship against Dan O'Hare and Schlack from Combat Zone Wrestling. So you'll get a little bit of a taste of the Southern style wrestling versus the Northeast versus the Combat Zone style wrestling, and just a bunch more. Rick Converse against C.W. Anderson, two long tenured North Carolina guys going at it. It's our super card of the year. It's what, you know, everything all year has been building towards and has been approaching. So it's going to be really special. It's our most special night of the year. Like I said, if you can drive to Greensboro, North Carolina, head to Gibsonville, just outside of Greensboro, and join us live and in person. If you can't, everywhere else in the world, we will be streaming the first three Wednesday nights in January, the show in three parts at youtube.com/CWF Mid-Atlantic. By all means, follow me on Twitter at Stutsy, STUTTSY, and please follow at CWF Mid-Atlantic. I've been tweeting the guys that were involved in Total Nonstop Deletion all day long, so you can find their Twitters at Ethan A. Sharp, at Chet_Sterling, and everybody else. Follow those guys along. And somebody put it a neat way to me today: get in on the ground floor with these guys, because I truly believe that there are guys that were on national television for the first time last night, but not the last. These are the guys that were on this broadcast last night that are going to be on national television again.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to throw in one more name, and I know he wasn't on the show last night, but a guy who really fits the mold of the main eventer, and that's Roy Wilkins. And I think you know, I just think that I mean, these shows in the last, I don't know how long it's been, but many, many shows, you know, anchored by Trevor Lee, anchored by Andrew Everett, but those main events have really been high quality, and I think can hold up. I've got the Bola 3-disc set right in front of me right now, but I think they can hold up with anybody, and I mean anybody. And so, biggest show of the year. I'm really looking forward to Trevor Lee. I'm really looking forward to Brad Attitude. I mean, I think we're going to – and Lee Valiant and Chet Sterling is going to be very good. And so I just – you know, I think it's going to be quite the evening. I mean, I normally you know, Christmas – but and it's perfect for me. I'm off for Christmas break, so I'm not rolling into it, you know, run over by little kids. So it's good. And a lot of my friends of different ages, I've taken teachers who've never seen a wrestling show before. I've gone the last show with three guys that I went to all those shows with in the 80s at the Greensboro Coliseum, and they're whatever it is, whoever comes with us, they're impressed. We're going to bring the teachers back again too, but they're impressed. I mean, it's something that really works, and it's cool to see. You know, Travis kind of gave me a hard time about not always the most positive person about all the wrestling I've seen over the years. So it's really cool to tell the truth and about wrestling in another facet. And there's all these pockets now of wrestlers and companies finding their niche, with the monolith still, you know, with the mothership still hovering over and doing their work too. But it's something there. And I Brad, I still can't believe you get your national television exposure playing a mute. What the hell is that?
Right?
Can you believe, I mean, God almighty.
They've suggested lines to me before, and I don't know. I think he shouldn't speak.
I agree with you.
Works better if he doesn't speak. But that's actually been a little bit. We've gone back and forth a little bit on if the scribe should speak or not. And I kind of think he doesn't. I kind of think it's better kind of maybe one day, because everything has a shelf life and everything has an end, and you know, who knows? Well,
you
maybe
know,
one day
do
I'll get thrown into the Lake of Reincarnation and come back out as a commentator. Who knows?
Well, you did the Jay and Silent Bob thing where, you know, Silent Bob finally spoke the one time. And that's it. You know, like you do that part. But, yeah, I mean, it cracks me up. But for a guy who is such a heel in real life and plays heel so well, you've got that expressive baby face that works for this too. So, But still, I just get it. I mean, that 15-year-old kid I knew in Thomasville, like, you weren't a mute. You aren't now either.
No, certainly not.
Yeah, so that's it's
not
funny how that works out. So, Travis, I want to thank you for being so patient with this. Travis?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
You're welcome.
And we'll callers who we didn't bring in, I just wanted to have this discussion, kind of do a liner notes to bring in not only, you know, what most wrestling fans would get out of that show last night, out of Total Deletion, but also to kind of fill in some of the little, you know, the little details that were there for those of us who have gotten to really appreciate the North Carolina Renaissance in professional wrestling. So, that's why I wanted to bring in Brad and kind of get that behind the scenes looks, and one of the most unique shows I think we'll ever see in professional wrestling. And it'd be interesting. I haven't seen the rating yet. It'd be interesting to see what it did, but I got a big kick out of it, man. I really enjoyed it. Brad, we'll have you on again. Keep doing what you do. And Travis, we'll talk. I do want to say this. Travis Bryant with his very first PW Torch newsletter column this week. I think that I'm really excited about that. I think that's really cool. And I was really excited, Travis, of course, that you wrote a column, made your points, and I didn't agree with a bit of it. I'm glad to see that, honestly. So, about Brock Lesnar. So that was
you're probably not going to agree with the next one either.
Ah, okay. Well, two's enough. After that, I need to agree with everything. So just run everything else through me. So, all right, guys. Thank you, Brad. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will be back this weekend, Bruce Mitchell Audio Show with editor-publisher Wade Keller. Lots to talk about. all over the world, I guess, this week. So we'll be there. Thanks for listening. Callers, thanks for being patient with me. We'll be back to our normal routine next Friday night. Appreciate your help, guys.
Thank you.
Yep.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with the one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly, and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.